Hi, guys. Let's go ahead and get seated and get started. This is section 162, The Meaning of Mormonism, Stuff You Missed in Sunday School. We're being recorded, so if you have questions afterwards or speak into the microphone so that everyone can hear you. You can purchase this after the session at the merchandise, or you can choose to support Sunstone as well. It's 60 minutes long, so we'll just make sure to stick to the schedule. I'll be giving you time cues so we don't run over. A little about this presentation. Joseph Smith said, the truth will cut its own way. Stuff You Miss in Sunday School is a 2017 Brody Award-winning advocacy platform that takes the complexities of Mormonism and distills them into bite-sized chunks. And one meme at a time. How does Sismus use social media to tandem these design and marketing principles as advocacy tools? So that's what we're going to be learning about today. Craig Stapley is a Deseret Book published artist and has worked for over 10 years as a contract illustrator for the church, for church periodicals. Since his faith transition, he runs the Stuff You Missed in Sunday School advocacy site, promoting transparency and dialogue within Mormonism. So let's turn time over and give him a round of applause.
Wow. I don't know. Just let it go. So, last time I gave a talk was probably in church. Long time ago. So I'm gonna dive in a little bit into the history of how Missing Sunday Stuff You Missed in Sunday School came to be. And I think a lot of that is tied up in how I kind of transitioned out of the church. And so for those of you that don't know, so my name is Craig. Oh, that's super cute. So to lead off, one of the quotes by Joseph Smith, actually, one of the grand fundamental principles of Mormonism is to receive truth, let it come from where it may. Stuff You Missed in Sunday School, for those that aren't familiar with it, it's an advocacy platform, but it's taking quotes, taking ideas, and putting them on cards, on memes, and then shared through social media. And there's a website that validates all the content that people can go to, but the primary platform for it is actually on social media. So it's all about the odd, the interesting, the challenging, the thought-provoking stuff you never learned in Sunday school. So a little bit about me. I was really, really in the church. So I didn't have much of a teenage years. We've talked about this before. This is my wife, by the way, Crystal. Right there. I call myself a convert of Saturday's Warriors. I was really into the church and in not enmeshed into understanding it, but just into the idea of it. I had a crush on a girl, actually, that I thought was the one, and so never dated in high school. Instead, I would spend my time drawing temples, hours and hours each day. I was a big fan of Chad Hawkins, if anyone knows who Chad Hawkins is. Another artist. And so it was a medium that I could use to fund my mission. And so that's how I spent the majority of my teenage years. And then it kind of worked, paid for part of my mission, but I was able to serve in Nicaragua, and I try to keep the swear words down, but in Nicaragua, if anyone that's been to a foreign mission, you poop your pants a lot. It happens. It's what you have to be careful, because you eat anything. You eat anything that they give you. And so you probably shouldn't, but you do. The Spirit quite doesn't protect from that. Got married in 2001. Oops. And then right after that, really started getting into the Mormon groove. Just made babies after babies after babies after babies after babies. So five total. Thank you. Oh, thank you. She did all the work. Used to joke around that I could just look at her a special way and she would just get pregnant. It was super easy.
That was just
the result of it. So we did the whole church thing. We fell into it. You know, I started everything, just teaching, doing callings. In fact, started illustrating for the church too. So I got my first job back in 2005 for the church. I was going to show an image of it, but I'm actually really ashamed of it because it was when I was really not that good. But for the next 10 years or so, I would pick up commissions and projects for the LDS Church, illustrating for the New Era, for the Children's Friend, and also for the Liahona magazines. And in 2012, I was fortunate enough, I was really excited about this, to get a Desert Book contract to illustrate this book, I Believe in Jesus Too. So, going great. Everything's going fantastic. Until 2015, I think is when it was. This is when we had, I had my nuclear faith explosion. It was pretty drastic. So for me, it all began with a stone. Probably a little bit before that, but the stone was kind of the big thing. There was a 2015 article that came out in the Ensign, I believe it was October, called Joseph the Seer. I had never been exposed to this in my mission, in the years of seminary, in institute. It was a new thing for me, and so it shocked me a little bit. As an illustrator, one of the excerpts out of the magazine said, each artistic interpretation is based upon its artist's own views, research, and imagination, sometimes aided by input and direction from others. This didn't quite sit well for me. I'd been illustrating for the church for 10 years, and they would have me change ethnicities if it didn't meet up to their standards. I probably took off 3 or 4 beards off of, because they cared so much about having the proper image and maintaining the proper look. And so the idea that shifting the blame or shifting the reasons for this little tidbit of information not being out there onto the artist just did not ring true for me at all. And so it started kind of this cascade of just thoughts and cognitive dissonance, and we throw that around a lot. And then the November policy came. You know, a lot of people remember this. It was a difficult time for, I think both of us kind of discussed this a little bit. I myself had a little bit of a change of heart a couple years previous. Up until that point, I was incredibly conservative, incredibly stuck in my ways. In fact, I got fired for being too conservative as a political cartoonist for one of the local papers up there. A weird story, but I got into ghost hunting for a year. I just thought it'd be fun. Okay. Total tangent. Are you going to say something?
Okay, and maybe you'll get mad at me for saying this, but he legit, sorry if this offends anybody, he legit tried to use his priesthood to call on ghosts. And he didn't tell me this until, like, we had already transitioned out and we were talking about it. He's like, I totally tried it. It was the best. I just had to say that.
Oh, I feel bad now. No, I felt a lot of shame for that, but yeah, I can't believe you said that. But you get desperate because you're just stuck in a dark room and you just want to hear something. And so it's like, just why not? No one's here. No one's going to know. I was the only Mormon in the group. So anyway, that's a tangent story. So one of the members of the group, I'd been with him probably 6, 7, 8 months, had formed good relationships with these guys, and then we were just sitting there chatting one night, and one of the guys, his name's Lance, he just is talking about a date he went on, and talked about a he. And to me, I'd had no clue that he was gay at all. And it took me about 2 seconds to realize that I didn't give a shit. That it didn't affect how I perceived him or how I thought about him. And for me, that was a transformative moment, really in my life. And for my family, it was probably the key that led me downhill. I voted for Obama. It was that's big no-no in our family. So the November policy came in, and it sparked conversation between me and Crystal, and it just started the gears rolling. And it gave me permission to ask questions. up until that point, I think every question that I had, I just kind of put into a box. A lot of people talk about the shelf. The shelf gets way down and then it cracks. For me, it was, I just put everything into a box and shove it over into the corner. You know, I just wouldn't disturb it. I knew they were there. There were questions I had, but I just didn't want to touch them or really recognize them. And so I started opening up the boxes and wanted to get answers to these questions that I'd always had. And it wasn't some exposure to anti-Mormon material. These were just things that growing up in the church you hear about. And so I did a post on social media. This was after we had some family members over. And I got in I was leaving to a work trip the next day. And I got into an argument with my mother-in-law. Love her to death. Beautiful woman. But started talking about the LGBT issue and the policy. And then she used the Bible, the Old Testament, as justification for the policy. And this really, really irked me. For one, my position. For another, I've actually read the Old Testament, and I know there's a lot of really weird stuff in there. So, I mean, if you're going to hate gay people, then you should hate wizards and witches, too. It frustrated me so much that on the plane, I actually wrote out 10 questions. I actually deleted...
He totally blocked me. So
I blocked her.
I didn't even know that he'd written these until I had, like, all of my friends texting me, did you see what... And I was like, I don't see anything. And then he got...
Well, it was because I was ashamed. I didn't want her to... It's living up to that standard, right? I was the priesthood holder. I was the one that was supposed to hold the family together. And so I didn't want her to know, but these I was so frustrated that these were questions that I had. Upon landing, the response that I got were testimonies, a lot of Satan has your heart, a lot of warnings, people warning that my family
what
was...
What about the children?
What about the children? In fact, we even got a few accusations of me having an affair at the time. It was just incredible. To me, it was me being extremely vulnerable with those that were closest to me, and I was hoping for some sort of empathy, some sort of understanding, people reaching out and saying, hey, these are questions that I've struggled with too. Let's go find answers for them, or someone that has already done this and give me answers. One of the funnier ones to me, and this is actually taken from one of the responses, is God and Christ work through... This is in response to a question about why a skin turned dark, or the DNA. And God and Christ work through natural laws, so if they plan to curse a people that have dark skin, creepy anyway, how would they do it but to change their DNA? And so that obviously explains the DNA change. So... I won't get into it too much. I made a lot of mistakes, I will say. I went through a pretty intense and vocal, angry stage. I'd come from being fully in the church and just having this sense of duty and honesty that, to me, I could not stand dishonesty. And for me, it was offensive to me. And this was one of probably... the better quotes that really resonated with me. I sat with my anger long enough until I realized that her name was Grief. And it was that idea that I wasn't evil. I wasn't Satan, despite what everyone was telling me, but I was in a grieving process of something that I really cherished and I really loved. So then I wanted to do something about it. I love this quote by Martin Luther King Jr. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. I wanted to affect change. I wanted to do something that could elicit a little bit of a response. And so my last illustration, put this in red, for the church. It just so happens that coincidentally in January of 2016, I got an email from the church asking for a Father's Day illustration. They gave me the different parameters of it, you know, what it was, and... in my mind, I wasn't thinking I want to burn the church down with this. I was thinking, what can I do to affect positive change? So I had no idea. I just started planning. I had a bunch of sketches I sent over for them. They approved kind of this watermelon picture for the cover of Friend magazine. And this was the ultimate illustration that ended up being. And I don't know if you can see it here. You probably can. I'll highlight it here in a second. But if you look a little bit closer, you notice the word love and also the barrette in the girl's hair. It's a barrette, right?
Okay. Or hair clip, whichever.
So for me, this was a message. And I had a close family member, too, that found out just right before this, who had come out to his parents as gay. And he kind of told me a little bit of the response that he got. And just to hear his experience and hear how these people that I respected, I loved, but they condemned him. And actually going to, as far as to saying, wish he'd died in his mission rather than turn gay.
Because then that meant he would be clean at least.
And so I wanted to do something that was more of a moral advocacy than something that would just stick a needle in the eye of the church. And so for me, this was a good message. Their email. So right after it was published, I got an email from them. Let me read it, if I can see it. So what are your thoughts and motivations of this subliminal message on the cover illustration? There are several ideas floating around. Would love to hear your interpretation. And I was terrified, absolutely terrified. I was always the good guy, and I had done something subversive, even though it was a good, positive message. And so I wrote back. I did not want to give any reason for them to come after me. And so I just said, LOL, subliminal. Do you mean the word love in the watermelon? I guess people can interpret the way they want, though my own interpretation was more general feel-goods, not too deep. I think it frames the picture well and thought it more obvious than subliminal. Why is there an issue? And their response. And I haven't heard from them since that day. That was the last email correspondence we had.
Well, and I think the reason why they even emailed you is because it went viral. Like, people were sharing it and pointing out, like, look at the rainbow barrette and look at the word love, especially after the November policy. It was huge for so many people, thinking like, oh my gosh, is this intentional? Did the church know about this? Yeah, they didn't. Yeah.
Yeah, if you go look on LDS.org, you can whip out your phones right now and go to June 2016. You can see it on the cover. So it's there. I was in the middle of transitioning at this point. So part of it, there's a part of me that just wanted to test the power of discernment to see if they'd actually catch it. They didn't. So not until after the fact. Yeah, so for me, it was a little bit of the death knell, kind of in my belief going into it. At least in that really literal belief. So after that, I really wanted to see what else I can do. I was full of just spitfire and vinegar, studying insane amount of books. I probably spent close to 40 hours a week. My poor wife had to put up with me buying tons of church books and reading them.
We frequented DI a lot, looking for random books.
Odd, random books and antique shops. But I wanted it to be positive, because one of the things I wanted to overcome was this trope that you just want to burn it down. And really, that wasn't my goal. In fact, starting into this, I went down several avenues. I wanted to build bridges. And so I actually bought the URL ldsbridge.org and started building a blog and a website. And I realized I'm still too angry. For me, it didn't fit my personality necessarily building bridges as much as it was. I just wanted to educate people. And the things that I wanted to really focus in on my advocacy was building transparency, accountability, inclusion, equality, and I put on their respectful dialogue. One of the things that is actually a huge turnoff for me within the Mormon community or the ex-Mormon community or everything in between is the lack of respect. I have no problem people challenging my ideas or me challenging their ideas or discussion, but you should never attack the person. You should never attack them as an individual. So I really wanted to promote this idea of respectful dialogue. So me wanting to do something, I come from a background of branding and digital media. So for me, that was kind of my platform. I justified it by this. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, media used to be one way. Everyone else in the world just had to listen. Now that the internet is allowing what used to be a monologue to become a dialogue, I think that's healthy. And so the idea is media, we're used to just be fed information one way. You know, in the church, this means they were actually able to control the narrative because there wasn't discussion. Everything was top down. And so the one thing the media has done is allowed there to be more discussion on these things. It actually allowed me a platform. So this is how we used to consume information, newspapers, magazines, radios, and books. And this is pretty much how we consume it today. It's true, right? Everyone in here, every single person in here. If not, then you're probably lying. You know, so radio was replaced with podcasts, television with YouTube, newspapers with social media. And so, and we're actually able to be a lot more selective about the type of media that we expose ourselves to. So on the one end, it's the great equalizer because everyone has a voice. But on the opposite end, it's bad because we could actually, we all live in bubbles and information bubbles. We can be more selective about what information we expose ourselves to. And so just showing trends, people moving away from traditional media to digital media, the gap is narrowing. And today, we're really moving in the direction of just primary information, how you get your news and information is via digital sources. This was actually a little bit of a shock to me, but people spend nearly 2 hours just on social media alone every day. Hopefully it's not all on the pot. It's a long time. I know some guys, maybe. But it's a tremendous amount of time, so it presents an amazing opportunity for advocacy. And this is one of the reasons why the church does not like it. This is from a 2017 fireside given by Ballard. He says, "Once people start going over and getting their information and living on the blogosphere, they're already in Google territory." We need, like, scary music. And they're neglecting the standard works of the church. They will be pulled away from their membership in the kingdom of God. And so the traditional LDS establishment does not like this social media trend because then people are able to be exposed to more information. So that gets into what I've done over the last year and a half. Memeing a Mormonism, it's kind of a dad joke. But the term meme was actually coined by Richard Dawkins. And so this is in the 1976 book called The Selfish Gene. He says, memes are discrete units of knowledge, gossip, jokes, and so on, are to culture what genes are to life. Just as biological evolution is driven by the survival of the fittest genes in the gene pool, cultural evolution may be driven by the most successful memes. And so he uses this comparison of a gene as an expression of an actual physical trait. A meme is an expression of an idea. The meme's evolutionary success depends on its ability to transfer from one person to the next. And so if we're looking at it, this is a meme. So Michael Scott, love The Office. Everyone loves The Office, right? Okay. But it's a meme that spread, that's what she said. It's a meme spread through television and social media. So it's an idea. He said it the best. It's a discrete unit of knowledge. And so just like that's what she said is a meme, actually, so is Christianity. And it's a meme that sped through.
I love that you used that picture.
So it's the best used picture out there. Let's throw that out there. But Christianity is a meme that spread through proselytization and indoctrination in the past, occasional bloodshed and conquest. But it's an idea that is spread. And so what makes an idea successful? The fittest memes really have four aspects to them in order for them to be successful, for them to be able to spread and affect change. Assimilation. So a successful meme must be able to infect a new host, enter its memory. It needs to be noticed, understood, and accepted. It also needs to be able to be retained. The meme must be frequently reinforced and repeated in order to retain space in the mind. So if you think like follow the prophet, or I know the church is true, or blessed these donuts that might nurture strengthen our bodies. You know, these are words that we use, but it needs to be able to be retained and repeated over and over. And we do this constantly within our culture. It also needs to be able to be expressed. It needs to be able to emerge from its storage as memory and needs to be able to take a physical shape so that it can actually be perceived by others. This can be a speech, text, or even touch. And it also needs to be able to be transmitted. And this is really the vehicle that takes it from one place to another. And I think along the lines of like a church talk or manuals or social media or podcasts or television. So this is a really popular, extremely successful meme within Mormonism, the idea that families can be together for it. We can start singing the song. Okay, I'm not going to do that. So what I wanted to do with Missed in Sunday, or Stuff You Missed in Sunday School, is really take these ideas, these nuggets of information within Mormonism, and to be able to highlight how maybe they're not as good as we think they are. To not create my own meme, but to actually build off of existing memes. And so with Families Can Be Together Forever, emphasis on the can, with exclusions apply. And by pairing this with an image, you really don't have to communicate that much. I don't have to have a ton of text on it, because it's about a discrete unit of knowledge that's easy to transfer. So another one we probably heard a lot, doubt your doubts. I know I've been hit up with this one a lot. Don't even have to change the text. but it has the power to evoke this idea and actually spark conversation and dialogue. If doubts your doubts is not good for Scientology, why is it good for Mormonism? Another one, I know the church is true. This is actually one of my pet favorites, so it didn't get a lot of views. If evolution is true, the church is false. And I have a massive man crush on Joseph Fielding Smith. I buy everything. I think I've bought everything he has.
I think so.
Yeah. Love the man to death. He didn't care. He had some crazy ideas, but at least he was open with them. And so massive respect for that. Another one that we probably get a lot of, they can leave the church, but they can't leave it alone. This one is actually a little bit of a beast to track down the original citation for, but every member of missionary. He or she has the responsibility of bringing somebody, a mother, father, a neighbor, a fellow co-worker, an associate, somebody in touch with the messengers of the gospel. So this idea of not being able to leave the church alone. So what I do is I take these contradictions and actually put them into an expression that they can actually be shared. And so what this consists of within what I've done is an image. So all my memes will usually carry an image. A lot of times this will be to communicate an idea, to highlight a contradiction, or just provide visual interest. There'll be a quote or an idea. And then one of the things I learned early on is you actually have to have accurate citations, especially within Mormonism. People are really quick to pick up on it. And the worst critics I'll have are actually ex-Mormons. So they really beat me to death when I first started doing these, just for not having accurate citations. And the next thing you need is you need to be able to transmit it. And so with Stuff You Missed in Sunday School, I do that via Reddit, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter are the primary accounts.
And sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
There's times he has spent hours upon hours of just coming up with the idea of the meme that he wants and then tracking down sources. And then if he cannot find the source, he'll let it go. And I'm just like, what the crap? You just spent like 5 hours trying to track it down, but he can't. So he won't use it. So anyways, props.
Well, she gets mad because then, I'm ignoring the family. And
give an example of what
you're doing. I can't think of one off my head. There's a few, like there's a quote by Heber C. Kimball, something, and this might not be a good example, cows and comparing a wife to a cow. And just trying to track down the actual citation for that is next to impossible. And there's a lot of other things like the 1949 First Presidency letter about really their statement on the blacks being restricted from the priesthood. I could never find the actual letter itself. And so what I've had to do is rely on, sometimes I rely on Fair Mormon because they'll validate it, or I rely on Mormonism and the Negro, which, again, they'll validate it. So I have to rely on kind of these secondhand sources. But that's rare. Most everything will go to firsthand. In fact, that kind of goes into this next part, is the validation. And so I did build a website, missedinsunday.com, so kind of a shortened version of stuff you missed in Sunday school. It's just easier to type out. And I'll link to citations. And because I know a lot of people are sharing these with their friends and family, and a lot of them are going to call BS, I make sure to link to LDS sources with almost everything. There's probably about 90% of the things I link to LDS resources, whether it's BYU or the LDS Church. Sometimes it's hard because BYU makes it really difficult just to search stuff. There's other ways that I'll use for research, but then I'll end up linking to BYU as far as source validation. The other thing what this does for me is it allows me to provide context. It's really important for me that we don't overstate our position and that we don't take something completely out of context and misconstrue it from what it's supposed to mean. And so I'll make sure to add ample context. If it's a talk, sometimes I'll put the entire talk in there so people can actually read it within context. One of the things I don't do is I don't do commentary. That's been actually one of my criticisms against me. For me, I see it as a positive. There's enough voices out there. You know, we have Bill Rill, we have John DeLynn, we have everyone. You know, the CES letter, the same thing. It's a voice attached to it. I'm not a historian. I don't feel educated enough in the breadth of Mormon history to be able to weigh in and to be able to defend my positions. At least I didn't back then. And so for me, it was about taking this one issue, this one nugget, whatever it was, and to be able to just validate that one issue and then to be able to put it up. And I didn't want to add any commentary because I think that's where you lose people. It was just an information source for me. So how has it worked? So far, we're about a year and a half into it. We have 400 plus memes. We've had almost 2 million social views, 180,000 likes, 93,000 page views on the website, and one wife that's still kind of hanging in there. A little bit, maybe. Yeah.
It has its payoffs.
Yeah. And one of the things I always get criticized for, especially by my family, is just reading anti-Mormon material, and they don't understand, like, I mean, it's probably been a year and a half since I've read an anti-Mormon book, or at least a critical book, and I think it was Fawn Brody's book. Most everything I read is just church books, just a massive amount of church books and Joseph Smith papers, which is phenomenal. It's a phenomenal project. So criticism, my criticism, is my fan mail, I guess. Sampling of it. I am Satan incarnate, but this is actually my uncle. What Craig needs is less cheerleading from his Facebook fans and to step away from the world, walk into the wilderness, and open his heart to God. So
he got a lot of stuff like that from family.
A lot of stuff, yeah. Your soul is filled with bitterness. A lot of this type of stuff comes from family, too, which actually makes it worse. So you are very civil and polite. I appreciate that, but from what I see, you spend a great deal of time, thought, and effort in persuading people to doubt. I just hope that you'll study the story of Core Horror and see it as a warning to you.
No, legit. Like, when we first started transitioning and Facebook, you know, how fights explode. Like, in our neighborhood Facebook page, holy shit. There was, like, a bomb. Oh, my gosh. It was insane. He got compared to Core Horror.
I love Core Horror. Can I just throw it out there?
Once he went back and read the story, he was like, oh, that's actually a compliment. Thanks.
No, Core Horror is one of my favorite characters in the book. I'm not even joking with that. I love Core Horror. Like, his arguments are actually pretty insightful. But it highlights another point. Like, when I discuss on social media, it goes back to that civil, respectful dialogue. I will go out of my way just to be nice to people. I will go out of my way to... one of the secrets, if you ever want to de-escalate a situation on Facebook, is like their comment. If they come out and they call you a baby eater, it doesn't matter. Like, just like their comment, and it will drop them down about 3 or 4 notches, and then ask questions. But it's taken me a lot of time to get to this point, but it's just, I really am even though my memes are extremely critical, I'm really conscious of just trying to open up people's hearts just to make friends, if nothing else. So we have a little bit more time. I wanted to go into the top 10 memes that I've had in the last year and a half. These are actually rated by popularity from Reddit. That's probably the biggest platform that I have currently right now. So number 10, this one by Ballard. Many of you have probably read this talk. We need you women. We need your voices. They need to be heard. They need to be heard in your community, in your neighborhoods. They need to be heard within the ward councils or the branch council. But don't talk too much in these meetings. Just straighten the brethren out and quickly move on the work. So that one got obviously a lot of people enraged. This one, I thought just drawing that contradiction between the second article of faith and the policy change. You know, we believe that men will be punished for their own sins and not for Adam's transgressions. But then a natural and adopted child of a parent living in a same gender relationship, whether the couple is married or cohabitating, may not receive an name and a blessing. So this one, I did while I was a little bit ragey, actually. So really wanted to, it was right after general, I watched general conference, I don't know why, but I every single session.
Holy cow, yes.
And pulling a quote from the Book of Mormon, you know, "For behold, ye do love your money and your substance and your fine apparel and the adorning of your churches more than ye love the poor and the needy and the sick and the afflicted." It's really powerful when you can actually use their own scripture to kind of draw that contradiction. Joseph Fielding Smith, again, my man crush. There is no death of any living creature before the fall of Adam. Exclamation point. Anything contrary to this doctrine is diametrically opposed to the doctrines revealed in the church. If there was any creature increasing by propagation before the fall, then throw away the Book of Mormon, deny your faith, the Book of Abraham, and the revelations of the Doctrine and Covenants.
Okay.
He was definitive. So this next one is actually a recent one. I put it up, I think, last week, and I was surprised by the popularity. I actually got criticized by it. The Relief Society is not a women's organization. It's a men's organization for women. That's why I got criticism for it. It was a little bit of a ragey post. It was an idea that I had, but it wasn't a direct quote, so it was more of an idea. This is actually one that I did not put up on the website. Because it doesn't have a quote or citation. This is another one of those that, again, not a quote or citation, so I don't have it up on the website, but the idea of the only true and living church upon the face of the whole earth, and then really highlighting prohibited black people from having traditional families until 1978. That one actually sparked a lot of discussions that I was able to be in. Number four, this one is another kind of controversial one, but a talk by Richard D. Scott. "At some point in time, however, the Lord may prompt a victim to recognize the degree of responsibility for abuse. Your priesthood leader will help you assess your responsibility so that if it needed be, it can be addressed."
That one made me ragey.
Yeah, it made her a little ragey. One of the interesting things that you're going to notice, I have two more in here that are less quotes from leaders, but commentary. So this one, again, just kind of a saying, is, "I didn't leave the Mormon church because I couldn't live up to their standards. I left because they couldn't live up to mine." Same thing with this one. "I'm not anti-Mormon. I'm anti-whitewashing, anti-indoctrination, anti-apocalyptic, anti-sexism, anti-historical censorship, anti-us versus them, anti-superstition, anti-spiritual extortion, anti-keeping..." I should make this shorter. "Mormonism as an institution is anti-me." And number one, this is the one that got by far the most votes, is drawing this comparison between the Catholic leader and the Mormon leader. "All the words, your concerns and criticisms, it's not a sin to criticize the Pope here, yes, not a sin, and inspirations that you carry in your hearts." And Dallin H. Oakes is a little bit of kind of my supervillain. I'm not a huge fan.
Neither one of us. He's
probably a doll, like in person, like, yeah. Maybe not. It's wrong to criticize the church, even if the criticism is true. I kind of want to talk about this too. A lot of people talk about what effect am I actually having with these memes? Is it changing any hearts? And there's been a few people that have reached out to me that they've been able to kind of come to a different view of the church via the memes. But by far and large, I'll say the biggest thing that these do is validate those that are leaving. Everyone that goes through the faith transition undergoes some form of trauma. What I found out is it's really helpful to be able to point to something and not have it be a commentary piece, not have it have so much a bias attached to it, but it's just a quote or a scripture that provides validation for those that are leaving. And I think that's why these ones actually resonate. They won't share these, but these ones resonate with people because they validate those feelings that they're having. So my least popular meme is actually this one. When Thomas S. Monson died, he was my prophet too when I was still in believing, so I wanted to do a tribute. I did have to go through a lot of Thomas S. Monson quotes to find one I liked. But he says, "Sometimes we let our thoughts of tomorrow take up too much of today. Daydreaming of the past and longing for the future may provide comfort, but will not take the place of living in the present. This is the day of opportunity, and we must grasp it." Which I thought was an amazing quote by this man, and it kind of taught me a little bit of a lesson. And just because this also got the least amount of views, is sometimes we get so caught up in our advocacy that we fail to see the value or the goodness in the thing that we're advocating against. And so it kind of gives me a little bit of pause and a reminder to take a step back and to really listen to the other side and to see if they have the positives to pull from it. So I have two favorite memes. I have two in here. So this one I spent a ton of time on in design and research, but just trying to pull all the people from the Book of Mormon and just to show that discrepancy. For me, it was extremely powerful visual to see that discrepancy between men and women. Because you get that a lot, and it's one of probably my biggest pet peeves is the sexism in the church. And to be able to highlight in a way that people really can't argue with was really important. And on a personal level, this actually draws from some Jonathan Haidt's research, which I spent a few weeks researching, but I have this quote from DNC, "You must ask first if it be right, and if it be right, it will cause your bosom to burn within you. Therefore, you shall feel that it is right." And then Jonathan Haidt's research, elevation, the emotion, elicits warm, pleasurable sensations in the chest, and it also motivates individuals to act more virtuously themselves. This wasn't one of the more popular memes, but for me, it's probably one of the most significant because during this transition, me and my wife have had some of the most deeply profound, I would even call them spiritual, experiences.
That was actually an eye-opener for me because he transitioned first, and we had these really lengthy conversations, and I'm still going to church and active and being like, well, how come am I feeling so much connection and the Spirit when we're talking about stuff against the church? It was really, really interesting. I think both of us really liked this one.
Well, and that was one of the last kind of battlefronts to overcome because I'd have some amazing experiences, but as we were discussing, we would have these deeply connective spiritual experiences, warmth in the chest, things I'd associate with the Spirit. And for me to just come understand that, though, that's a common human reaction that everyone has, that everyone experiences. And that's why I think it's really powerful to communicate that to members and non-members. So, okay, with that, I guess prepared for any questions. Are you gonna, you're gonna answer too?
If it applies.
Okay.
Joseph Smith had a rather large nose, and if you look at the death mask versus other pictures of them, when in your experience with the church did they ever have you make someone look better than they really did in real life? And I have a second question. The images that you used look like they come from the church, and you worry about copyright infringement.
First question, yes. So I've not looked better. They've never told me to make anyone look more attractive. usually I try to make the illustrations look good regardless, but I do want them to look normal. They actually will go out of the way to make me include diversity, though. The church is really concerned with how they portray themselves within the magazines. And I notice this within the Enzyme magazine anyway, when you look at General Conference, they'll go out of their way to shoot, you know, the one ethnic diversity person in there. In fact, my dad.
Yeah, his dad, who's blind, so he's walking down the steps with his stick.
With his cane, and sure enough, he got in the Enzyme
magazine.
Yeah,
that's really funny. We were like...
So I've been told to remove beards, change ethnicities, put a little bit more clothing on. You don't want porn shoulder showing.
He would always try and put as many beards on people, just hoping that they would be like okay and let it go. It was nope.
Yeah, and as far as the second question, a little bit concerned.
I don't think he'll really be concerned until, because he hopefully eventually wants to do a book with all of his memes, and that's probably when.
And
we'll
so
have
a lot of
that,
a lot of that's coming down. That's one of the biggest. I've been asked to do a coffee table book or some sort of, or cards, and that's been the biggest challenge. Is I want to make sure if it's a for-profit thing or if I'm going to print something, I want to make sure that it actually aligns with current legal laws. And so there are images out there that I'm starting to build a library of that are free that I can use or that I can pay for. And so hopefully that comes out here soon. So.
Hey, so I follow your posts on Facebook, and I want to love all of them, but I usually don't because I get so much heat from my family. And earlier you guys were mentioning how you seem to be getting a lot of heat from your families too, and I'm just wondering like how you deal with that, how do you think through that, what are your attitudes around that?
You need to come to our presentation
tomorrow.
We're
actually doing a presentation about that tomorrow.
No, good.
Oh, okay. Well, Craig,
I flamed out. Like
he,
I was.
He
super
burned
vocal.
A lot of people.
I lost a lot
on.
Of friends, gained a lot of friends.
Yeah.
But for me, it was more important about being open.
Yeah, and I think for me, because I was so interested in wanting to maintain those relationships, especially with my family, I think it was just being open and honest and vulnerable and showing them empathy and being like, I understand, it's so hard. I was there not too long ago. I think we probably have all probably done this to an extent with our family members, but I think the biggest thing that helped me at least was validating their concern and, you know, what are you going to teach the kids? That was one of my biggest fears. And so it was mostly my mom, just like, we'll teach them what's right, regardless of what we think the church should.
Yeah, I would send weekly letters to my stake president and bishop. I actually tried to get excommunicated because I wanted it to be because of me just being vocal about sharing things that were factual. And I'm like, if they're not factual, tell me how they're not factual. You know, and then you have a reason to excommunicate me. So I tried. My bishop's a sweetheart, though. He's a saint. Stake president, not so much. But just not, they didn't know a lot of the issues. But a lot of the reason why I continued to post, actually, was because people would reach out to me and they'd say, you know, I can't repost your stuff or I can't share it, but what I can do is like it with the hopes that maybe my family member will come across it. And so that's one of the reasons I keep it up.
So I just wanted to share two ideas I had for possible memes you could make.
Yeah, do I need to take notes?
Your choice.
Maybe let's hear them.
But yeah... First of all, if you read the story of Korihor did nothing wrong.
No, he didn't.
No, he absolutely didn't.
Yeah.
So here's a thought for a meme you could make along that. Take the passage from, I think it's what, Alma 34, something like that, where Korihor is talking and he says, "For lo, I did see an angel of light, and he instructed me in what I should say." And pair that with a picture of Joseph Smith seeing the angel Moroni.
Okay, I'll look into it.
There's a thought.
Yeah, I'll definitely try it. You said you had two.
And the second one, you mentioned that you retracted the Relief Society-related one because you couldn't find an attribution.
Well, that one was more of just an idea.
No. That was just, this is an idea that I have. It was more my commentary piece.
Right.
And so it was less of a quote.
So here's a thought for maybe, you know, next step you could take that.
Yeah.
I've heard it said that the Relief Society is a women's organization. The same way that a dog sled team is a dog's organization. So maybe find a quote from an Ensign article or something that lauds and prays and extols the virtues of the Relief Society and pair it with a picture of a dog sled team.
Yeah, and... Okay. So I get that, and I hesitate to step so critical. I used to do that. Some of the earlier memes, if you go on the website, you'll find like they were way more harsh, way more critical. I just feel it kind of damages the brand. I come from a background of branding, and so how people view Mist and Sunday and what they associate with is really important to me because it stands for something, whatever that idea is, and oftentimes I can't control that. But sometimes people will do stuff like that. They'll actually take my template, build their own memes, they're hypercritical, and I'm okay with that, but I tell them to take off the logo. Just because I'd want it to have some veracity or some validity, so I don't get that pushback, I guess.
Well, and a lot of it is, I think, because a lot of people share these with their family members and wanting to kind of have a middle ground of like, well, here's...
Well, because oftentimes they don't know, they don't have the background or the historical information or context to argue it. And so they kind of depend on those citations and that validations to be there.
So I think you should do those ideas and just keep them.
Keep them in my back pocket. Go ahead.
Yeah, here's something that would probably be a good thing to do a meme on. Now, I've noticed a double standard with some members of the LDS Church, and I'm not trying to paint with a broad brush, but some of them, when they talk about people hearing things about the Mormon Church, like in their Southern Baptist Church, or from any types of critics, they'll say things like, "Well, if people want to know about the church, they should talk to the missionaries." But yet they don't apply that same standard when it comes to learning about the community of Christ or other churches, because sometimes they'll hear something from another Mormon and they might think they're an expert on it. So have you ever noticed that double standard, and have you considered doing a meme on that sort of thing?
I haven't. It's definitely an idea. So to go ahead. Oh, I don't know if you were going to say anything else.
That was basically my question. Because I've actually noticed that sort of thing within my own immediate family.
Yeah.
There's a lot of double standards when it comes to...
Yeah, there are. In fact, I have, just because of time, I have an Evernote document of about 400 meme ideas still left on the docket. So I'll be driving, and I'll write something down. And so it's not for lack of material. There's actually a tremendous amount of material out there. A lot of it's just lack of time. And also lack of time to research, because, again, each meme requires a tremendous amount of research, some more than others. The most powerful ones, more research than others. So, awesome. Any more questions? Okay.
Yeah, I just have a simple question. Are you profiting off of these memes, or
somehow,
or not really?
So I did.
Are you spending lots of time on these memes?
So I've probably spent probably about $1,000 in the last year. I set up a
website hosting.
So I did set up a Patreon. Was it 2 months ago? 3 months ago? So I think I've profited total $175.
Okay.
So yeah, I guess.
Technically, it's not
net
a profit
or gross.
Yet.
Like, how do you wage that? So for me, it isn't about profit. Like, there's no way there's not money to be made in Mormonism nor anti-Mormonism. I mean, maybe some people.
Well, depends.
Depends. Yeah, I guess who you are. For me, that's never been like the motivating factor.
Well,
a lot
of
it for me was just to offset some of the costs I was putting into it, as far as website and.
Yeah. And we don't want to be doing this for forever. And I feel like once you kind of get into that area of making money off of it, you're kind of stuck.
You're
with
stuck
it
in it
for
yeah.
a while, and I don't know if we really want to do this forever.
Yeah.
So it's more of a service, you would say, kind of.
Yeah. What do you call like an
obsession? Is a good
thank
idea.
You. Because it started as being hurt, right, from a position of being hurt and wanting to do something about it. What made it persist is. My family members still not knowing anything about the church, and so there was a need for it still, and then conversations, and so either that rekindles anger or rekindles that obsession, and plus now I'm over the anger stage for the most part, but I love Mormon history, like I absolutely love it, and so I digest books like crazy, and so if I come across something interesting, like I'll definitely meme it and use it, so.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had another quick one.
No, go ahead.
Related to Delbert
Stapley.
Yeah, I made a few memes off of him too. So he's my grandfather's cousin. And so my middle name is actually Delbert. So I've fallen far from the tree, I guess. Okay. That fruit. Okay, thank you very much.